Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, March 14th, 2024. Three arrested in alleged meth fentanyl ring after Alpine deaths, by Rob D'Amico. Rob at BigBendSentinel.com. Just 2 weeks after his brother died of a suspected fentanyl overdose in Alpine, Willie Sapo Ben Lara III and two companions left Alpine last Friday and drove to Chaparral, New Mexico, where they then went on a drug binge for a day before heading back home with a stash of fentanyl and methamphetamine to sell, according to a complaint filed in court this week by federal investigators. But Lara and his companions didn't make it to Alpine. According to the complaint, Hudspeth County Deputy Elvis Wolf pulled over their Ford Escape on Monday in Sierra Blanca for a partially concealed license plate and cracks in the windshield, along with a crude eyebrow painted on the inside of the vehicle's windshield. A canine from the Border Patrol was called to the scene and signaled there were drugs in the car. A search of the vehicle resulted in finding 8,500 doses of fentanyl and a bag of methamphetamine. Arrested for possession and intent to distribute and conspiracy to possess with intent to distribute were Lara, 34, of Alpine, Emily Rachel Medley, 29, of Fort Davis, and Michael Angel Espinosa, 34, of Alpine. All three are being held in the West Texas Detention Center in Sierra Blanca with no bond. A bond hearing is set for March 14th in federal court in Pecos. Lara's brother, Ismael I.J. Vega, 23, died while taking drugs with his mother on February 15th in their home in Alpine, according to several sources close to the family who asked not to be named for privacy reasons. The sources suspected a fentanyl overdose, and Vega's mother survived an overdose after a trip to the Big Bend Regional Medical Center. Lara fled town after his brother's death, and because he was known as a major supplier of drugs to the Alpine area, numerous law enforcement agencies had actively been looking for him, the sources said. The three arrested Monday waived their Miranda rights and explained in interviews how they would purchase the drugs and split them up for personal use, with Espinosa then selling them in Alpine for Lara, according to the complaint. Officials from Homeland Security Investigations, the Department of Public Safety, the Alpine Police Department, and the Brewster County Sheriff's Office all are participating in the investigation of fentanyl and meth smuggling and sale in Alpine. According to recent Drug Enforcement Agency news releases, pills labeled as oxycodone 30 are often counterfeit for actual fentanyl with potentially lethal doses and are sold after being smuggled in from Mexico. Court records do not describe the actual pills or the amount, but the records state that each defendant is facing 10 years or more in federal prison. The complaint listed officers finding 13.8 grams of crystal methamphetamine, 10.9 grams of fentanyl pills, 2.6 grams of fentanyl powder, and 3.5 grams of fentanyl in a rock form known as cement. On February 6th, 34-year-old Daniel Danny Celaya of Alpine was found dead from a suspected overdose at Uncle's Convenience Store at 2411 East Highway 90 in Alpine, according to Alpine Police Chief Daryl Lasoya. However, Lasoya stressed that toxicology reports from an autopsy have not come back for both Zelaya and Vega, so the cause of their deaths has not been proven to be fentanyl overdoses. Dodson said he was happy to hear about the Sierra Blanca arrests. "I'm grateful that that much fentanyl isn't going to make it into our community," he said. The sheriff said he hasn't seen an uptick in fentanyl-related crime, but he understands the danger the opioid poses, particularly since fentanyl can be so much more profitable in drug dealing than marijuana. He called Lara's actions heartless and wondered about the motivation of dealers, even with the potential money they can make. "If you're a drug dealer, you're killing your clientele," he said. "It just doesn't make sense sometimes." Dodson said Brewster law enforcement agencies are exploring the creation of a task force to address fentanyl. "We're looking at it so we can train everyone and get them on the same boat. So when we have a call, especially a death, we can get all these agencies to come out to see if we can resolve the cases as fast as we can." In the wake of the suspected overdoses, Brewster County officials warned residents about the dangers of fentanyl, and the Alpine Police Department and the City of Alpine hosted first aid training that included instruction on how to use the anti-overdose drug Narcan. Photo courtesy of Ted Cruz. U.S. Senator Ted Cruz, left, discusses border issues with Presidio County Sheriff Danny Dominguez at last week's State of the Union address. Democrat Sheriff Dominguez throws support to Cruz, attends State of the Union. By Rob D'Amico. Rob at BigBenSentinel.com. Presidio County. Presidio County Sheriff Danny Dominguez may have been blue by label for 28 years at his post, always running as a Democrat, but he waded into deep red last week as an official guest of U.S. Senator Ted Cruz at the State of the Union address to support the Republican and weigh in on border issues. In an interview with the Big Ben Sentinel this week, Dominguez said he's backing Cruz because the senator is not hiding the significant problems caused by recent waves of migrants crossing the border. "We're talking about 11 million people that we don't know," Dominguez said, citing Cruz's figure estimating how many migrants have come into the country in the past few years under Biden, 10.4 million. "They are living like hobos on the streets, and we're paying for all this," the sheriff said. "The government is forking out the money that comes from us." Dominguez appeared with Cruz in a video in Washington, D.C., before President Joe Biden's address and in a campaign ad for the newly launched Democrats for Cruz, in which he states, "I have 108 miles of border, and the last 2 years, border security has gone out of control. Texas can't have a senator that doesn't stand with law enforcement." Cruz is facing Democrat Colin Allred in the November general election. On Tuesday, Allred participated in a press event for Democrats for Border Security Task Force, a coalition of members of Congress supporting the Senate Bipartisan Border Agreement, legislation that would provide $118 billion in funding for border initiatives. The legislation would include money for more Border Patrol and U.S. Customs agents, additional judicial officers to process asylum claims, more detention facilities, and other assistance to cities dealing with an influx of migrants. Cruz railed against the legislation and called it a steaming pile of S blank blank blank. Dominguez agreed with Cruz that there are too many problems in the bill to support it. Presidio County remains an outlier in the Texas political landscape. It's solid blue, with 66% of voters going for Biden over Trump in 2020. Jeff Davis County went 60% for Trump, and Brewster County was more balanced, with 51% for Trump. Democratic voters outnumbered Republicans in the March 5th primaries, 1,609 to 122. When former county judge Cinderella Guevara switched from Democrat to Republican in 2022, she lost to current county judge Joe Portillo, 1,228 to 608. It's no wonder Dominguez has followed suit of so many candidates by continuing to run as a Democrat. He recently ran unopposed in the Democratic primary, and with no Republican challengers in November, he will start his eighth term as sheriff. Precinct 4 Presidio County Commissioner and Democrat David Beebe, who is active in Democratic politics, said Dominguez is just echoing right-wing talking points, and he knows the sheriff has always been on the side of Republicans. I remember he had a Ted Cruz sign in his yard the last time Cruz ran, he said. Beebe said the fact that you have to be a Democrat to win an election in the county means you sometimes end up with strange bedfellows. Hey, if you want to be a Democrat in Presidio County, come on over. Republicans are welcome. Dominguez said the majority of the problems he encounters with migrants are from those who don't turn themselves in for asylum processing, something mainly occurring in El Paso or south from Del Rio to the lower Rio Grande Valley, who then can become public safety concerns. Dominguez agreed with Cruz's assessment of these gotaway migrants as criminals, murderers, child molesters, and rapists. It's true, he said. It's happening more in some places than others. We don't have that much here. I talk to my sheriffs on the border, and they tell me that. Every bit of it is true. Unlike the high numbers of crossings from Del Rio to Brownsville, Border Patrol migrant encounters in the Big Bend sector, which stretches from Sierra Blanca to Sanderson, have remained relatively flat over the past decade and even decreased 68% from a peak of 37,266 to 11,823 in the fiscal year ending September 30th. Encounter numbers for the entire southwest border, from California to Brownsville, between ports of entry, plummeted in January to near 2022 levels at 124,220 and 324 for the Big Bend sector. When he spoke to Cruz on video, Dominguez told the senator, "In the last 3 years, everything has dramatically changed. The influx of illegal aliens has started pouring into my county. Not as bad as South Texas or El Paso, but we still have them. We can barely handle the ones we have. So that's what I see, a lot of car chases, a lot of pursuits. We haven't had any accidents, nothing major, thank God." Dominguez told the Sentinel that his office does not compile statistics on public safety offenses related to migration, such as human smuggling, car chases, or other crimes, because he doesn't have the resources to do so. In his video with the sheriff, Cruz also brought up the threat of terrorists from Hamas or Hezbollah crossing into the U.S. Dominguez said it was a concern in the Big Bend because of the remote stretches of the border not patrolled by law enforcement. Beebe said it's not unusual for Dominguez to back the current refrain from Republicans about an overwhelmed border, even if that is somewhere else on the border, because the county, and particularly the sheriff's office, is benefiting greatly from state funding, like Operation Stone Garden grants, that provides additional money for equipment and overtime for officers. Presidio County has received about $1.4 million in Stone Garden grants to date and currently is applying for $250,000 more. Beebe said some of that money ends up wasted on high-tech equipment the county doesn't need, but it allows for things like new trucks, all-terrain vehicles, and overtime for deputies doing interdiction work by the border, looking for drugs or migrant-related offenses. Honestly, that helps our deputies make a better living, he said. Beebe said it's unfortunate, though, that Dominguez gets to share his negative comments on migrants to a bigger audience, and migrants have no political voice in a culture of fear instilled by Republicans. Dominguez, he speculated, is following the pack of other border sheriffs decrying an invasion at the border. He did acknowledge that Dominguez knows his county and does a good job of taking care of it. The sheriff said he believes Cruz has the interest of the people at heart. Unlike other politicians who only want the power, they don't care about the people out there, they care about themselves. I'm here to support somebody who I know is going to do something about this, and that is Ted Cruz here, Dominguez said at the end of the video, motioning to the senator. He called me, a Republican senator called me a Democrat because he shares my values. Petition to rename Elephant Rock sparks controversy by Sam Karras, Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Presidio County. At Wednesday's commissioner court meeting, representatives from the Big Bend Conservation Alliance and the people of La Junta for Preservation gave a presentation on an upcoming two-pronged project. The organizers first hoped to install a historical marker at the Elephant Rock pullout on Highway 67. Eventually, they'd like to push the state government to consider changing the feature's signage to Cibolo Rock, mirroring the ranch, creek, and Native American group of the same name. When a petition for the renaming started circulating on Facebook, dozens of people, locals and non-locals alike, brought out the pitchforks. For as long as I have lived, this has been called Elephant Rock, one poster commented. Why rename it? Some of the negative responses were generated by old-timers nostalgic about road trips through the years. Others drew comparisons to the so-called woke agenda and the tearing down of Confederate monuments in an effort to erase history. The organizers insist that their goal is just the opposite. They want to reclaim Presidio County's history and tell a side of the story that most people haven't heard before. Local historian Oscar Rodriguez emphasized that while the petition is being led by a coalition made up primarily of Mexican-American and indigenous organizers, it wasn't meant to favor any one group. Instead, the proposed marker would celebrate all of the groups of people who have made the county what it is today, from Spanish explorers to Anglo ranchers to the dozens of native groups who call this place home. Cibolo Ranch is one of a very few cultural artifacts in Presidio that links all the people who came here and are still here, he explained. Rodriguez offered a brief history of the term Cibolo, which means bison to regional Spanish speakers. Explorer and castaway Alvar Nunez Cabeza de Vaca passed through what's now Presidio and Ojinaga in 1527, and was struck by how many native groups lived there. We wandered among so many others and so many diverse languages that it is impossible to remember them all to tell about them, he wrote. Cabeza de Vaca was also impressed by their cows, which historians believe were actually bison, as domesticated cows had not yet reached northern Mexico. Juan Antonio Trasviña y Fretes came to the area in 1715 with the goal of establishing missions. one of which was placed at the modern-day site of Cibolo Ranch. The Spanish marked natural features in the area with the name Cibolo, a word derived from the legendary Seven Cities of Cibola. But they were convinced lay somewhere in the then unexplored Great Plains. The word Cibolo emerged as a catch-all term for creatures from the plains, most notably the giant bison that roamed in abundance. The modern-day elephant rock was referred to as Cibolo Rock as early as the 1880s, when Major William Livermore was tasked with mapping the area. The name stuck until the 1960s in the aftermath of President Johnson's Highway Beautification Act. TxDOT went to work marking roadside attractions for the rise of highway tourism, including Elephant Rock. Rodriguez explained that these roadside stops were designed haphazardly, with little local participation, leading to the decision to interpret the shape of the rock formation as an elephant rather than a bison. They didn't do any research. They didn't seek any input. They decided amongst themselves, he said. As indigenous historian Enrique Madrid told the Big Bend Sentinel in August 2022, the only elephants that came through Shafter were with the circus. Presidio High School graduate and Harvard-educated anthropologist Nakaya Flotte co-authored a paper about the site with Rodriguez. Flotte emphasized that while she would like to re-indigenize the history and culture of the Big Bend, the project wasn't about imposing something new on a beloved landmark. I could understand the arguments against if we were changing the name to an indigenous name that had never been registered, she said. I hope that people understand that it's not about change. It's about going back to the way things were. Christina Hernandez of the People of La Junta for Preservation couldn't help draw a connection between the naming of Elephant Rock and the literal erasure of her family's indigenous past. Hernandez led the charge of the project to reclaim El Cementerio de los Lipanes, a Lipan Apache cemetery that was raised by the city of Presidio around the time the Elephant Rock marker was erected. Throughout her life, she's struggled to protect the small piece of her ancestors' final resting place that remains. I grew up calling it Elephant Rock, she said, but when I look at this timeline, I think of the 9/10 of my family's cemetery that was erased from the ground, literally, to create city lots. In stark contrast to the Facebook flame war, county leaders at Wednesday's meeting were supportive of the initiative. Precinct 3 Commissioner Jose Cabezuela and County Judge Joe Portillo brought up the fact that indigenous languages are still intertwined with the languages that everyday Presidians speak. For example, the local word for twins is the Apache cuates instead of gemelos, the standard Spanish term. I think it's a worthwhile project, and I hope you guys are successful, Judge Portillo said. BBCA Executive Director Shelley Bernstein was hopeful that the online arguments would spark positive discussions and provide an opportunity for people to learn about the region's past. It's not necessarily about changing minds, she said. I look at this dialogue as a critical dialogue that needs to be had. Precinct 1 Commissioner Brenda Silva Bentley ended the discussion with a message of support. I think it's important to celebrate that history, and I'm willing to stand by it. Photo courtesy of BBCA. A pair of community advocacy groups is campaigning to rename this popular roadside stop Cibolo Rock in honor of the area's history. The rock formation was assigned the name by the state of Texas in the 1960s without community input. There are hundreds of elephant rocks all over the country. Why shouldn't we focus on what makes us special? Big Bend Conservation Alliance, BBCA, Executive Director Shelley Bernstein wondered. Low turnout marks Tri-County elections. Wrap up on regional, state, and national races. By Rob D'Amico. Rob at BigBendSentinel.com. Tri-County. Area early voting and election day turnouts for the March 5th primaries were lower this year for the primary elections than in 2020, the last time presidential candidates were on the ballot. Presidio County's turnout, with 4,327 registered voters, dropped from 46.29% in 2020 to 40% this year, and early voting dropped from 37.17% to 30.78%. Vote totals are not official until counties canvass the election, but the numbers are not likely to change significantly, if at all. The 2020 election did have a contested Democratic presidential race, then Vice President Joe Biden versus Senator Bernie Sanders, which may have affected turnout. Presidio County voters went overwhelmingly for Sanders, 41.1% to Biden's 16.6%. Trump had only minor challengers when the Texas primary took place in 2020 and took 96.7% of the vote. Brewster County experienced a more dramatic drop. With 7,162 registered voters, turnout fell from 63.86% in 2020 to 27%. Early voting turnout was only 14.16%, down from 52.87% in 2020. Jeff Davis County, with 1,550 registered voters, also declined in turnout from 78.08% in 2020 to 45.99%. Overall, in Texas, a big decline in Democratic voter turnout resulted in a total drop in primary voters from 4.1 million, 25.3%, to 3.2 million, 18%. Republican turnout held steady, but Democratic turnout plummeted from 12.9% of registered voters to 5.4%. Brandon Roddinghouse, a political science professor at the University of Houston, told the Texas Tribune, "I think there is less enthusiasm for the big matchup in 2024, which is almost certain to be between former President Donald Trump and President Joe Biden. We've been there, done that, and I think a lot of voters are kind of sitting on the sidelines until things change." U.S. regional and state races of note. Former Republican President Donald Trump bested contender Nikki Haley in all Tri-County results, 85% to 6.7% in Presidio County, 76.9% to 2.7% in Brewster County, and 66.8% to 25.8% in Jeff Davis County. In the Democratic primary race to challenge U.S. Senator Ted Cruz, Colin Allred came out on top and avoided a runoff in a crowded field with 58.8% of the vote. Roland Gutierrez came in second at 16.7%. However, Gutierrez came in first with 30% of the vote in Presidio County, with a second-place finish by Mark Gonzalez at 27%. In U.S. House District 23 race, Republican incumbent Tony Gonzalez took 45.1% of the vote across his district, but was forced into a runoff with second-place finisher Brandon Herrera with 24.7%. Gonzalez will face the Democratic winner, Santo Limon, in November. In Texas House District 74, Democrat Eddie Morales was uncontested and will face Republican primary winner Robert Garza in November. For Texas Senate District 29, Cesar Blanco was uncontested in the Democratic primary with no challenger in November. For State Board of Education District 1, without going incumbent Melissa Ortega, candidates were uncontested in both primaries. Democrat Gustavo Reveles will face Michael Travis Stevens in November. Supreme Court stay on SB 4 extended to Monday. By Sam Karras. Sam at BigBenSentinel.com. Washington, D.C. On Tuesday, Justice Samuel Alito of the United States Supreme Court extended an executive stay temporarily pausing the implementation of SB 4, a controversial immigration law that would make illegal entry into Texas a state crime. Alito issued his original stay last Monday. The extension will prevent the state from enacting the law until this coming Monday, March 18th. SB 4 was passed during a long stretch of legislative overtime at the tail end of 2023. The bill was a major victory for state Republicans, who have long argued that the Biden administration isn't doing enough to quell an invasion of migrants and criminals at the border. The Texas legislature's and the governor's efforts, all within their authority, have effectively driven Texas to act as a shield for the rest of the country against the criminal activities of the Mexican cartels. The Texas Public Policy Foundation, TPPF, a conservative think tank, wrote just after the bill was passed, "We commend these efforts." Some disagree with Governor Greg Abbott and conservative legislatures that regulating immigration is within their authority. Shortly after the bill was passed, the national and state chapters of the American Civil Liberties Union, ACLU, and the Texas Civil Rights Project sued the state on behalf of the County of El Paso and two immigrants' rights organizations, Las Americas Immigrant Advocacy Center and American Gateways. The Federal Department of Justice also filed suit in January, and the two suits were combined over a central concern. Does the state of Texas have the power to enforce federal immigration law? On February 29th, Judge David Ezra of the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals said no, opining from the bench that SB 4 constituted a slap in the face to federal immigration law. He also predicted that his ruling would be just another stepping stone to the Supreme Court, a prediction that quickly came to pass after the state of Texas filed an appeal. Counsel for the state of Texas filed a response on Monday, indicating that they stood firm on their position, that Texas has the power to take action against violent transnational cartels that flood the state with fentanyl, weapons, and all manner of brutality. Because of Texas' geographic position on the border, the state argued that it faced an unfair burden of handling what should be a national problem. Texas is the first line defense and has been forced to deal with the deadly consequences of the federal government's inability or unwillingness to protect the border, they wrote. The Fed's response to Alito's extension, filed Tuesday afternoon, addressed some of these issues. Though the DOJ has leaned on Arizona versus United States, a 2012 Supreme Court case that struck down a state law similar to SB 4, they decided instead to lead with Chai Chan Ping versus United States, a 135-year-old immigration case. The Chai Chan Ping decision was born of a similar political climate. The United States signed a treaty with China making it easier for Chinese nationals to immigrate to the United States. Once large numbers of people from China started arriving on the West Coast looking for work, attitudes changed, resulting in the Chinese Exclusion Act of 1882. Their immigration was in numbers approaching the character of an Oriental invasion and was a menace to our civilization, the government wrote in its defense. Chai Chen Ping and a suite of other immigration cases in the wake of the Chinese Exclusion Act established an immigration policy pecking order. Immigration is regulated by the federal government, but federal policy must adhere to international treaties. In United States versus Texas, the case currently before the Supreme Court, the government argues that Texas cannot claim that it faces exceptional circumstances as a way to thwart constitutional precedent. People can disagree about immigration. They always have, they wrote. But the same was true of California in the 1870s, Pennsylvania and Michigan in the 1930s, and Arizona in 2012. Nevertheless, for 150 years, this court has made clear that states are not allowed to regulate the core immigration field of entry and removal. This is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, March 14th, 2024. Obituaries. Celaya. Ildefonso S. Celaya, also known as Pancho, age 89, of Alpine, Texas, was called to his eternal home on Sunday, March 10th, 2024, at Big Bend Regional Medical Center. Pancho was born August 1st, 1934, to Maria Santiago Celaya and Federico Celaya in San Vicente, Texas. On December 2nd, 1957, he married Berta Gallego. After residing in Marathon, Texas for 29 years and raising six daughters, they moved and made their permanent home in Alpine, Texas. Pancho was a God-fearing, selfless man, a husband, father, grandfather, great-grandfather, uncle, friend, heavy equipment operator, and most gentle of souls. He was a humble man of immeasurable faith, unconditional love for all, and passionate about his work and time at the ranch. He was preceded in death by his parents, Federico and Maria Celaya, brothers Hilario Celaya, Pablo Celaya, and Pedro Celaya, and sisters Margarita Sanchez and Ignacia Grano. He is survived by his siblings, Gregorio Celaya and Marcela Portillo, wife Berta Gallego Celaya, daughters Rosella Lonnie Salmon of Alpine, Rosalinda Mike Cordero of Fort Stockton, Texas, Lorena George McGuire of Odessa, Texas, Dorina Heflin of San Antonio, Texas, Sonia Jess Roberts of Denver City, Texas, and Corina Jo Ray Ramirez of Alpine. He was blessed with and greatly loved by 12 grandchildren and 15 great-grandchildren. Visitation will be at Our Lady of Peace Catholic Church at 6 p.m. on Thursday, March 14th, 2024, with the Most Holy Rosary following at 7 p.m. Funeral service will be held at Our Lady of Peace Catholic Church in Alpine at 10 a.m. on Friday, March 15th, 2024, with interment following at Holy Angels Cemetery. Snow. Olive Evelyn Hill Snow passed away peacefully and surrounded by her family on March 7th, 2024. Born in Alpine, Texas on December 6th, 1921, to Eva Mae Henson and Jesse James Harding Hill. She survived the Great Depression and spent her incredibly interesting childhood in Texas and Arkansas. Olive graduated from Mount St. Mary Academy in Little Rock, Arkansas in 1939 and Drawn Business College in 1940. She went to work in 1941 in the Surgeon General's office, worked as the Chief Nurse's Secretary in Ashburn General and William Beaumont Army Hospitals, the business office at Sol Ross State University, and as the Media Secretary for Region 19 Education Service Center until retiring in 1981. She married Frank George Snow, an officer in the U.S. Army, on November 27, 1946. Their first child, Frank James, was born in 1948. Sharon was born in 1950, and William was born in 1960. They lived in Texas, Maryland, Japan, and Germany. Olive and George were married for almost 65 years before he passed away in 2011. Olive and George enjoyed traveling the country in their Airstream trailer, and they were members of Paseo del Norte, Texas unit of WBCCI, attending the annual international rallies whenever possible. She was an active member of PEO, the Order of the Eastern Star, the Retired Officers' Wives Club, and the Cielo Vista Garden Club. After 102 incredible years, Olive is survived by her children, Sharon and William, her son-in-law, Tom, her grandchildren, Kara and Catherine, and her grandson-in-law, Constantine. She was preceded in death by her husband, George, and her eldest son, Frank James. She joined her family at Elm Grove Cemetery in Alpine on March 13, 2024. The Snow family has entrusted Alpine Memorial Funeral Home with arrangements. Condolences may be left online at www.alpinememorialfuneralhome.com.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, March 14, 2024. City raises building registration fees, sets public hearing for annexation request. The Fort Stockton City Council met in regular session Monday evening and voted to raise building code fees and set the first public hearing for an annexation request by Texas New Mexico Power. The fee required to register to build had been $75 for the initial registration and $50 for the renewal, but the new fees will be $100 for renewal and $125 for the initial registration. The annexation request was made by the Texas New Mexico Power for a little less than 32 acres of land in an effort to procure utility services. The land is located at North Ellison Boulevard near Animal Services Clinic to Dyke Street. The city also approved a municipal services agreement for the property and set the first public hearing on the item for April 8th. The city entered into an interlocal agreement for labor and equipment with Pecos County Water Control and Improvement District 1. They approved a maintenance support agreement contract between the City of Fort Stockton and Teralogic Document Systems. They maintained the LaserFish program that the city uses to scan its documents, such as ordinances and resolutions. The maintenance agreement is for $7,700 annually. Approved the bid for Hydro Resources Mid-Continent for building water well number 6 replacement well services. The City of Fort Stockton has these RFPs for well number 6. The problem with well number 6 is the casing of the well is broken. The camera utilized to observe the damage shows this casing is broken in several places, has fallen inward, preventing us from installing the pump and the pipe. They approved initiating the inclusion process for a portion of Section 17 In other words, vacant land south of I-10, east of Best Western, to North Rio Street near Fort Stockton High School, and just northeast of the high school baseball field to the Flying J truck stop. The city also approved accepting sealed bids from a licensed professional surveyor to provide a plat with boundary survey that satisfies applicable regulations and statutes for the state of Texas and for the inclusion process. Both items were approved with zero discussion. An item to discuss 230 feet of cement paving of West 2nd Street at the new fire station entrance to be completed by LT Construction. As approved by the Economic Development Corporation on March 8, was removed from the agenda, as well as the pay application for the item was also removed from the agenda. The council approved infrastructure assistance to Texas New Mexico Power Company in the amount of $230,000 as approved by the Economic Development Corp. Approved solar lighting and playground shades for Lanham Park. The project has been scaled back to only include the playground shades and the solar lights, said Remy Ramos. This will be completed as part of the Lehman Park, and then we have the option to expand that. The council also approved payment to AOT Recreation in the amount of $98,000 for the installation of new swings and playgrounds with shades as part of the park renovation project. Where we're going to just build a shade was the initial plan. The playground was probably one of the oldest pieces of equipment that we have, and it was hard to justify a $50,000 shade over a piece of equipment that was going to be replaced within a few years. So we have gone completely in with a brand new playground and shades. They approved a donation of bullet and stab protective vests from Vested Interests in Canines to the Fort Stockton Police Department. It was a grant that our canine officers asked, and we got together, applied for it. This is what the company does, is provide over 5,500 vests across the whole U.S. We're lucky to be actually getting two. They approved a purchase of an M2106 conventional cab sanitation truck from Houston Freightliner, purchased for over $253,000, utilizing funds for the fiscal year. The build-out usually takes anywhere from 6 to 7 months, so we request permission to get this ordered before the end of the fiscal year or the beginning of the next year, adding that it was out of capital improvement section of the budget. County appoints Fort Stockton Library Board. The Pecos County Commissioners Court on Monday amended the ordinance establishing the Library Board, appointed 7 to the Public Library Board, and approved the board's bylaws at its regular commission meeting. The 7 board members appointed are Ross Harper, Jim Hatcher, Molly Yeager, Darren Hodges, Rosalie Sullivan, Victor Robbins, and Penny Smith. And the board will act as an advisory board and make recommendations to the county commission and the librarian in regards to the policies and procedures regarding use of the library. Meetings will take place at 12 o'clock at the library on the third Wednesday of each month, and the April meeting will be designated the annual meeting where officers will be elected. Each board member will serve 2 years with additional appointments renewed up to 10 consecutive years of service. The county initially passed the ordinance that established the public library on September of 1975, establishing the purpose, organization, appointment, and duties of the board, appointed a librarian, and provided for the finance of the library. The county attorney proposed that the 7 appointed this year serve through December 31st and in December be appointed for full 2-year terms. The court approved tax refund applications for Connolly Brooks in the amount of $26,600 for West Texas Gas Fuels for $2,218. The court approved paying Sterling McCall Ford invoices for the purchase of two ambulances at a cost of $66,000. Approved ISA Architects to advertise for bids for remodeling of the existing Pecos County EMS building in Fort Stockton and Iran. Declared an emergency, exempting from competitive bidding, and authorizing demolition or removal and replacement of the Imperial Communications Tower and providing for funding and payment. They allowed Precinct 4 to change budgeted funds from Dump Road Colbert Crossings to Weatherby Road Construction Entrance, Road Concrete Entrance. Designated authorized signatories for TXCDBG Colonia Planning and Construction Fund Program for Precinct 4 to replace a water line from Kyanosa to Imperial. This is the water line that takes the well field from Kyanosa and takes it over to Imperial and Kyanosa. That'll finish that line. It's there. We just had to replace an existing one. We had to do it in segments. The commission selected Grant Works as the administration project delivery service provider to complete application preparation for the Colonia Planning and Construction Fund program, administered and funded by the Texas Department of Agriculture. They approved a request from Pecos County Water County ID, WCID, number one in Precinct 1 for a water line. Your guide to local places to go and things to do. March 14th, high school softball versus Midland High, noon, versus Brownfield at Midland, 6:30. Fort Stockton High School baseball versus Snyder, Andrews, at Andrews, doubleheader at 4 p.m. March 16th, 10th Annual Mule Deer Foundation Banquet, Pecos County Civic Center, 6:30 p.m. March 19th, Ministerial Alliance Lenten Luncheon, Our Lady of Guadalupe, 11:45. Fort Stockton High School Baseball versus Seminole, 4-7. March 21st, 23rd, High School's Junior Varsity Softball Tournament at the high school. 21st to 23rd, Comanche Springs Rodeo. March 22nd, Leveland Invitational Track Meet. Fort Stockton High School Baseball versus Monahans, 4:30 and 7. March 23rd, Sub-Varsity Baseball at Midland Trinity, doubleheader at noon. March 26th, High School Softball at Andrews, JV at 7, Varsity at 5. March 26th, Fort Stockton High School Baseball at Andrews, 4 and 7 p.m. April 3rd and 4th, District Track Meet at Fort Stockton. Comanche Springs Rodeo returns with more family fun March 21 through 23. Fort Stockton will kick off the spring season the right way with the annual Comanche Springs Rodeo March 21st to 23rd at the Coliseum in Fort Stockton. Started in 2019 and paused for COVID in 2020, the rodeo has grown since its 2021 return and is adding some more activities in 2024. Friday night is family night. Big Bend Telephone is going to have jumping houses there for the kids. And then, of course, we'll have a mutton busting and boot scrambles. The rodeo is a presentation of the Fort Stockton Chamber of Commerce. It's sanctioned by the Professional Rodeo Association, the Cowboys Professional Rodeo, and the New Mexico Rodeo Association. The contractor is Cadillac Rodeo Company of Maia. The fun begins Thursday, March 21st, with Rodeo Slack beginning at 6 p.m. Slack is free to attend, and Friday's family night performance is free for kids 12 and under. Family night will have the bounce houses and adjacent to the vendors area outside the arena, and Friday's performance begins at 7:30 with the bounce houses open around 5:30. Saturday's activities kick off with the rodeo parade at 10 from Rio Street downtown. The rodeo performances to begin at 7:30 p.m. The rodeo dance featuring State Line Band begins at 9 next to the Pecos County Civic Center. The parade is free to enter and all entries will be accepted. The indoor concession in the Coliseum lobby will sell soda, water, cotton pickles. Other concession sales will be the vendor outside the arena in the ID parking lot. Beer can be purchased in the parking lot as well, and anyone who plans to purchase alcohol will need to obtain a wristband. In conjunction with the rodeo, the Tyler Magnus team roping will take place Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Friday opens roping begins at 10 a.m. and Sunday open roping at 9 a.m. with Saturday Comanche Classic beginning at 10. For more info on the roping, call Tyler at 512-940-4786. Events for the rodeo include bareback, saddle bronc, ranch bronc, team roping, steer wrestling, and bulls, as well as ladies' barrels and tie-down. The 2024 Miss Rodeo Comanche Springs pageant takes place March 22 and 23. The royalty is Miss Rodeo Comanche Springs Kaylane Kimonas. Miss Rodeo Comanche Springs teen is Kendall McCombs. Princess is Sadie Woods, and sweetheart is Kinsley Morris. We want everybody to come out and have fun.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.